This is episode number 335 with UFC heavyweight champion of the world, Randy Couture.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Welcome, everyone, to this incredible episode with the man of the hour, Randy Couture. I'm so excited about this. I did not want to stop this conversation. I had so much fun and enjoyed how far Randy went in this episode and how much he talked about. We talked a lot about many things. But for those who don't know who Randy is, he's a former collegiate wrestler turned UFC fighter turned superstar actor, and he is best known for starring in all three of The Expendables, Ambushed, and The Scorpion King 2. He also served as a four-time U.S. Olympic wrestling team alternate and is a six-time world heavyweight and light heavyweight UFC champion and Hall of Famer. Now, he also served as a soldier in the U.S. Army, and he did that before he actually went into the UFC. So he served for many years, and then it wasn't until his late 20s and early 30s when he got into the UFC, when most people actually start retiring at that age. And he is the first of only two fighters to hold two UFC championship titles in two different divisions. Now, he is known as one of the roughest, toughest guys in the world. And also, I was so touched by his generosity, his calmness, his love, his joy. I mean, he is an amazing human being. He's more than what it looks like on the surface. And we talk a lot about his history. You know, his father left when he was a young kid, and he had a lot to deal with growing up and really wasn't able to express his emotions in a certain way, and talked about how he's overcome that. We talked about the definition of a real man and what it means to be masculine in the modern world. We talk about how to achieve your dreams at the age when people don't think is even possible. We talk about reinventing yourself, as Randy has done over and over and over again. We talk about relationships, as Randy's gone through many different ups and downs in relationships. We talk about how to raise children who want to be fighters. We talk about a lot here, and I'm super pumped and excited to introduce you to him, because he is just a genuine, incredible human being, and I think you're going to fall in love with him as much as I did. Make sure to share this one out, guys. This one's a lot of fun. Check out the full video interview back at lewishowes.com/335, because this one is a powerful one, and we really go there in a lot of ways. Also, at the end, you know, Randy never got to tell his dad how he really felt about him leaving when he was a young kid. And at the end, he shares with me what he wished he could have told his dad before his dad passed away. So some powerful things here. A lot of great stories from working on The Expendables with Sylvester Stallone and Chuck Norris and Arnold Schwarzenegger and all these superstars. Shared some incredible stories, and I think you're going to fall in love with this. So without further ado, let me introduce you to the one, the only Randy Couture. Welcome, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got the legendary Randy Couture on. Thanks so much for coming to the studio, man. Pleasure. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
You are like the epitome of like the ultimate man. So I'm excited to have you come on here. You're like the ultimate badass, the ultimate man. But I think the idea of you is like this ultimate badass and man. It's like you're like also the nicest guy I've probably had at the studio. You're like the warmest, kindest, like most gentle soul as
thanks.
Well.
So I try to keep it simple.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. I want to share some facts about you that I found on the internet, and you have to tell me if these are all true or not, because you never know what the internet says. But is it true that you served in the U.S. Army?
That's correct.
From 82 to 88?
Yeah, yeah. 6 years in the United States Army. Went in it at 19, had a brand new family.
Wow.
Coming along and couldn't afford, could stay in college. Basically, I walked on to Washington State in 1981, 82 and
wrestling.
Yeah. And, didn't have a scholarship or any of that stuff. So, I decided to join the service. And my dad was in the Navy. My uncle was in the Navy. The Army seemed like a way to go for me. They were given a $5,000 enlistment bonus at that time
as
an air traffic controller, which I was interested in aviation. I originally joined because I wanted to fly.
Huh.
And so I took the $5,000, went through air traffic control school and was an air traffic controller. But they figured out pretty quickly that I could wrestle.
Well, there was like a freestyle wrestling team with the Army. So
the All-Army wrestling team, which I didn't know anything about when I joined.
Really?
But I won a post-tournament at Fort Rucker and then went straight to Germany. My first duty station was in Germany. And at that time, in the peak of the Cold War, there was about 5 million soldiers stationed in Central Europe. There was a lot of soldiers because of the Soviets and the whole thing that was going on at that time. And so they had huge sports programs for morale, and all those sorts of things. And I ended up winning a wrestling championship in U.S. Army Europe, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to try out for the All-Army Wrestling Team.
Wow.
And wrestle representing the Army at the Inter-Service Championship. And then found out that was a qualifier for the Olympic trials.
That's insane.
So this whole thing took off that I thought had died, when I got married, had my first kid. I was a one-time state champion in Washington, was trying to walk on and make the team at
Washington. You didn't even get a scholarship.
State.
They weren't even looking at you.
No.
You essentially really weren't good enough for a D1 scholarship at the time.
That's basically what it boiled down to.
Wow.
I had a couple of junior colleges that were interested in me at that time.
Sure.
They were looking for the guys that wrestled year round that would go into the junior nationals and winning national titles at that junior age bracket. And I never did that. I never wrestled freestyle or Greco at all.
Yeah.
And then here I am in the Army, wrestling Greco and freestyle first time I'd ever done it.
Sure. Amazing. And so you went to the Olympic trials.
I represented the Army and was an alternate on the 88 Olympic team as a soldier.
Amazing.
In the four of my 6-year enlistment, I spent wrestling and won a couple of inter-service championships and ended up placing very, very high in Greco. My coach was a Greco guy and Floyd Winter. Those guys, those coaches were important to me because my dad wasn't really around. Those were the guys I looked up to. They taught me that work ethic, and those were the guys I kind of emulated. Taught me how to be a man in a lot of ways through the sport of wrestling. So all my coaches, Coach Casebeer, Coach McAvoy in the Army, Coach Winter, and then in college, Coach Burnett and Coach Say were important guys in my life.
Yeah.
And
What would you say is the definition of a man to you? What's it mean?
The definition of a man, I think a real man doesn't really have to wear it on his sleeve. You can be tender. You can show emotion. You can be vulnerable, if that's the word you want to use. You don't have to prove anything to anybody. You never let your ego get in the way of what's right, what you really need to do. And we all struggle with that. We all have that. We wrestle with that, if you will. I don't know. Maybe it was because my dad was never around much. I was always striving to gain that, find that self-worth. If I wasn't good enough for my own dad to be around, it was always that kind of doubt in the back of my mind that I had to prove myself. I had to earn it somehow. That's why I got into the sport of wrestling. I knew through stories from my mom that he was a wrestler. He wrestled. And so I thought maybe I'll get his attention if I wrestled. And it didn't work out that way, but I found where I was supposed to be. I found the thing I was good at. I found the thing that helped me travel down the road and gain that appreciation and value in myself.
Yeah. Did you feel like you had a lot of aggression when you were wrestling, or you were kind of taking it out on the mat on other people? Or
I was never a fighter. I'd never gotten to, I had, maybe 2 street fights all through school. And maybe that was because I was on the mat getting that physicalness and getting all that out on the mat. I was never really an angry kid. I think I was always kind of that guy that was smiling, even when he was getting his ass kicked. So I don't know. It just wasn't wired that way.
Yeah.
And I think for a guy that walks up in a cage and fights somebody, that's people can't have trouble wrapping their brain around that.
Yeah.
You know, even walking out the tunnel, walking out to the cage, I was always winking, smiling, you know, this is what I'm here for. This is what I train to do. I'm here to have a good time and show everybody what I've been working on. And this is my opportunity. It wasn't about anger, animosity, aggression, any of those things. It was about competition for sure. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between being competitive and being aggressive and having that, you know.
Do you think a lot of the guys who maybe are wrestling or in the UFC or high level MMA are doing it out of competition or more of out of anger, trying to prove something, trying to, you know, show the
I think we're all competitive for sure.
Yeah.
And then everybody's an individual. What motivated them to step into it is a really, really personal individual question.
Yeah.
Same thing about retiring. You know, everybody asked me because, you know, what about Wanderlei Silva? Should he retire? What about, you know, Dan Henderson is a good friend of mine who's still fighting, well into his 40s and, you know, should Dan retire? And I'm like, man, that's a tough question to ask me to.
Cause you're 48 when you retire,
you know,
right?
Yeah. I definitely pushed it further than a lot of guys may push it. Dan's been fighting longer than I fought and, still competing at a very high level. It's a personal thing.
Wow.
You know, Tito Ortiz, you know, his first UFC was the same as me, UFC 13. He's still fighting for Bellator, you know, and still has that passion and wants to put
that
himself
itch
out there and grind out a camp and go out and compete against somebody. You
know? Yeah.
I just had other things I wanted to focus on.
So yeah.
Such a personal thing.
Yeah. So since your dad wasn't around growing up, who was the most influential person in your life?
Well, my mom, obviously. She was working, you know, two jobs a lot of times to take care of three kids, mostly by herself. And, you know, that I had a chore list every week. I learned a work ethic and just, you know, I was the oldest of three. I had two younger sisters and there was a lot of, you know, responsibility on me as the oldest guy in the house, the only guy in the house for a long time to take care of things, to get stuff done.
Did your mom ever remarry or?
She did for a while. She was married to Don through my junior high and high school years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess it lasted about 6 years.
Yeah.
And there were a whole bunch of things about Don that I really liked. He was an outdoorsman. He was an avid hunter, an avid fisherman. He was one of those do it yourself kind of guys, fix the cars, you know, let's build a cement stairway in the backyard up to the back, you know. I knew how to do all that kind of stuff. So for a kid my age, that was like, wow, that's really cool. You know, I would love that sort of thing. But at the same time, he was kind of a verbally abusive, kind of an incessant tease, but always took that way too far. And it was, I think, hurtful in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So kind of any confidence you gained, you got kind of undermined. And
there was something still wrong. Yeah.
So
what about the male, the male role models for you, like the,
again,
the coaches?
My coaches were real important. You know, some of my friends' fathers took me under the, you know, one of my best friends, Mark Baggerly, his dad, Mr. Baggerly, Mom and Pop Bags. They called him Mom and Dad. He was our Boy Scout troop leader. Tim Dietschman, my neighbor, one of my good friends, his dad, John, you know, my car need fixing. I'll go to one of those two. They knew how to fix it. They knew how to build it. They knew how to take care of it. And those were the guys that, you know, picked up the slack in a lot of ways.
What would you say were the biggest lessons that your coaches, your wrestling coaches taught you about on the mat and off the mat? And how was their approach to teaching?
I think just, diligence. Being, you know, whatever it was going to be, you needed to work for it. Well, nobody was going to hand it to you. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. You better suck it up and get it done and do it yourself. Don't rely on somebody else. And, the sport of wrestling is one of those few sports, I think, that develops that kind of character.
Yeah.
You know, you spend the time, run the extra mile, do the extra drilling, you know, it's going to pay off and you're going to see the results and you're going to win the matches, the close matches, the tough matches. And I think that I learned that from the sport and from those guys that taught me and made me work in the sport.
Right. What about being in the Army? What was that like, you know, wrestling, but also what was the energy like with just all the men in there? What was that experience like?
I mean, formative time from 19 to 25 years old. So,
looking,
you know, going through military training, basic training and advanced training and, Aerosol School, Primary Leadership School. Those are all schools, military schools that I went through when I was in that during that 6 years, as well as being part of an elite wrestling team and all the work that,
that's
that
a lot
goes
of work.
Into that. I think you start to look at the world in a particular way. You look through a specific set of eyes and apply that to every problem that you come up against. And, I think that's what ultimately carried me down the road and allowed me success, you know, to get through college from 25 to 29, older than most of the guys on the team that were, that I was competing against and competing with. And then ultimately into MMA at 33, almost 34 years
That's
old.
That's when you started.
Competed till I was 48.
So was that your first UFC fight?
I was 33, almost 34. Yeah. May of 1997.
A lot of guys retire then, don't they?
Yeah. By combative sports.
They're done. They're beat
most
up.
Most guys are over the hill at that age already, but I think that's changed a little too. Do the sports, or the science of sports. You know, 40 has kind of become what 30 used to be.
Right.
In a lot of ways. We're seeing a lot of guys.
Recover a lot faster.
Across the board, a lot of guys are pushing it into their 40s, well into their 40s, where it used to be, and you pushed it maybe into your 30s or mid 30s.
Right.
As a professional athlete, as a high level athlete.
What's the difference between preparing for a wrestling match, where you know you're not going to get kicked in the face, compared to preparing for, you know, an all out cage fight, where it's like, the guy's trying to literally kill you as opposed to pin you. It's a much, you know, it's a different energy.
Wrestling is a,
like, how do you go into that mentally, physically?
It's a concentrated version of MMA.
Yeah.
A wrestling match, even if it goes overtime, is only going to last 9 minutes. You know, the average collegiate match is 7 minutes. A freestyle match is 6 minutes. And then there's some overtime if it's that close.
It's quick.
Yeah. So that's and you're being called constantly for stalling, for passivity. So,
so you
had constant action. That's one of the first things I had to learn, was to temper that wrestling mindset that I'd spent so many years developing, and know when I could rest, know when I could pull back, play position, you know, take a break. Cause for a 25 minute fight, there's no way you can go at that pace.
No,
you're going to tank at some point. And you don't want to be there. Run out of gas in the middle of a fight, it's not a good place to be. So learning to kind of temper that energy, when to turn it on, when to turn it off. And that only comes with experience. So, I think, finding a good, healthy group of guys to train with, guys I knew, guys I trusted I knew they were going to push me. They wanted to punch me as bad as I wanted to punch them. But at the same time, they were going to take care of you. They weren't trying to hurt you. They weren't, you know, they weren't trying to prove that they were better than you, or that I had a great group of wrestling friends like Dan Henderson, Matt Lindland. We all kind of got into this at the same time. And, so we knocked the hell out of each other, but we had a blast doing it.
What was the most memorable moment for you as a wrestler?
As a wrestler, I think the Pan Am Championships in Havana, Cuba, in 1991. I was, you know, the Cuban in my weight class. I'd wrestled him several times. I'd never beat him. He was a silver medalist in the Olympics, silver medalist at the World Championships. He was very, very good. And then I wrestled him in the finals in Havana in front of Fidel. And I beat him. That was the first and only time I beat him. It was amazing.
Just a
great match. I was on, you know, it was like one of those times when you got everything right and you peaked and just had that competition where everything just flowed. I picked him up and I threw him and he actually made the news, the throw did. So it was just one of those events where everything came together.
Is that video on YouTube any chance?
I don't know.
I gotta link that up in the show notes if we can find that. That's cool. And did you qualify for the Olympics then?
That qualified the weight class. The Hemispheric Championship, the Pan Am Championships. Wrestling is one of those sports where you have to qualify your weight class to go to the Olympics. Unlike the World Championships in a non-Olympic year, anybody can go.
Right.
Anybody that has a team can send a team and go to the World Championships or the Olympics. There's a qualification process. You have to qualify through either having placed at the Worlds at a top six or top two in your hemisphere. I ended up losing in the trials.
Oh man.
So I was the number one guy in my weight class in 92 and 96 and managed to take second in those trials. So devastated.
That's tough.
They'll go 4 years and then
I know the feeling.
Stumble in the final match and, you know, to make the team. So I was an alternate.
That's tough.
In both those years as the number one guy, the guy everybody expected. But I think that, you know, that motivated me. That kept me motivated into my 30s. You know, I was still wanted to compete, still felt like I had things to accomplish, and it worked out. Had I made one of those teams and won my medal, I probably would be coaching somewhere and we wouldn't be sitting here talking.
Right.
To be honest.
30 years old. I'm done. Achieved the dream.
Yeah. I would have stayed in coaching and just continued to coach as a college coach, and, would have never probably forayed into MMA and done all the stuff that happened there.
Isn't it funny how sometimes our biggest letdowns can turn into like the greatest opportunities for
us? Yeah. If we keep our wits about us and stay focused and not let it change us and ruin us as people.
I play on the USA team for a sport called team handball.
Oh yeah. Great sport.
Team
yeah.
And so I've been to the last Pan Am championships, in Brazil and Argentina, the last two in 2012, 2014. And the, 2016 is next month. And so I'm going with the USA team to Argentina again for a week and a half to compete in the Pan Am Championships to qualify us for Worlds. So I'm right there.
Yeah.
And I'm 33. Mm-hmm. So I'm still playing the sport kind of at an older age. It's not as intense physically as UFC, but it's still really intense.
No, it's an absolutely
it's a physical sport. Yeah.
I'm a fan of the sport.
It's a great sport, right?
Having lived in Germany for 3 years,
it's huge in Germany.
It's very, very popular in Europe, much more popular than it is here.
It's pretty much unknown here.
Yeah. And so. I'm familiar with the sport.
Yeah, that's cool. Did you ever play?
Never played.
Yeah.
Watched it.
And, yeah, it's fun.
You know, I like to watch it.
It's cool.
But I never had the opportunity to play it.
Yeah. So it's cool that you had that experience in Cuba. Because I'm going to be experiencing that here very soon.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you prepare then for UFC fights? You went from wrestling and transitioned into MMA and UFC. How did you decide, like, okay, I'm going to start punching people now, and I've never done that before.
Yeah.
I've only been in two street fights, essentially, and never learned to punch.
Which is a whole different thing,
A whole different thing. How did that transition happen?
I used that wrestling eyes that I developed that, again, you look at the world in a particular way, and, okay, here are the rules of engagement. Here's what I need to learn. Here's what I think, you know, how I see myself as an athlete, how I match up, you know, and there's a lot of things that were habits that I developed as a wrestler. First of all, the mental skills to deal with the adversity, deal with the adversity of competition, which is the difference between a lot of the best guys and some of the guys that had the physical talent but never really kind of got over the line, never really finished strong. I had the opportunity to work with sports psychologists and learn some mental skills and apply that then to fighting. And then a wrestler breaks things down in a very tactical, technical, by the numbers kind of way. That's how we learn in wrestling. And I just started applying that same thing to fighting. It's like, okay, I need to know what these jiu-jitsu guys are doing. How does this work? And what, you know, start putting myself in those situations and technically trying to learn their perspective and what they're trying to do. And where are the pitfalls for me as a wrestler who tends to be aggressive? You know, where am I going to get in trouble here? And the same thing with boxing, kickboxing, all that. I'd never really done a lot of that. So I just had to keep putting myself out there, be willing to get punched, be willing to get submitted, be willing to take my lumps basically as I learned. But that learning curve, I think, was fast because I was a high level wrestler and was willing to check my ego and just put myself out there regardless of what I'd done in wrestling. That didn't matter at that point. It worked out.
What was the mindset, like the approach when you were like, okay, I've got a fight coming up. How did you think? Did you think differently on a daily basis? Was your, you know, where did you go in your mind, in your zone?
Well, I think, you know, for me, it was sit down. Okay. They want you to fight this guy.
Yeah.
I'll sit down with my trainers, my strength coach, my ground coach, my striking coach. Those are the three guys that are going to help me prepare. We'd sit down, we'd look at footage, we'd try and find the oldest fight to the newest fight of this guy and just watch him fight. And
as
many as I could find.
Wow.
We'd watch and, you know, get an idea how he'd progressed, where he was, where he won fights, where he lost fights, where he seemed to score, where he didn't seem to like to be. And then have to be rational about, okay, well, how does my style fit with this guy? Where can I put him? I have a pretty good idea what I'm good at.
Yeah.
How can I put him in positions where I'm in the best spot to win this fight, to make him uncomfortable, to make him quit, to make him work harder than he wants to work.
Interesting.
And make him quit. And then you formulate a game plan, you know, okay, these are the things I need to be aware of and watch out for because he's good at these things. These are the things he doesn't seem to like to want or want to do or where he wants to be. And then you start fashioning your certain days you're doing strength conditioning, certain days you're sharpening striking tools, certain days you're sparring hard with sparring partners that are making you work and making sure your mindset and your physical conditioning is up where it needs to be.
Sure.
And you map it out. Here's fight night, 7 days back. Here's my last hard workout because I need to rest and have my legs under me. You just map it out. Okay. These are my strength conditioning days. These are my mitt work days. These are my hard sparring days.
Right.
And you go all the way back to here's the day we are actually watching film and formulating this plan. And now you start executing the plan
every day.
Yeah. And you get halfway through it. You're like, man, what was I thinking? That looked really good on paper, but I am beat. I need to take a day off. I need to learn, you know, that's one
for
of the, I had
camp,
to learn.
Yeah.
I had to learn to listen to my body. I had to have the confidence in the plan to take a day off here or there to let myself recover, let myself, you know, get a breather, active rest days where you're out of the gym. You're not in on the mat grinding out another day. Go ride your mountain bike. Go do something else that is still physical, but not.
Yeah.
Not the same grind. Thing. Gives you that break.
The grind is tough, man. And when you were, let's say it's an hour before the fight, what was your routine like? You know, you're in the arena, you hear the noise, the 50,000 screaming fans.
That's why you're smiling.
You're the ticket.
That's time. Yeah.
What do you do, think, breathe, eat, feel?
You don't really eat much then. You know, most of that's been taken care of. You ate earlier in the day and you're really operating on what you ate the night before after weigh-ins. You have a ritual, a warm-up, you know, you wear a specific set of clothes. You go through a specific set of calisthenics and warm-up exercises and stretching and then you have a game plan. So, you know, you're going to put yourself in kind of drilling in those situations, the things that you've trained to do that whole 10, 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. You mimic those as much as you can in that back room on that little mat.
Yeah.
And you know, the monitors are there so you can see what's going on
in the fights.
So you have to be careful, especially when you have friends fighting. You can't emotionally plug in.
Get excited.
Into those because I'm spending energy that I'm going to need when I got to walk out there and I got to fight. So that's always a hard thing too. But just, you're very focused and enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the biggest
thing. Kind of let go of everything else.
Yeah. And everybody's like, oh, aren't you nervous? I'm like, no, why would I be nervous? I chose to frame it differently. Mm. This is something I learned through dealing with a sports psychologist. Yeah. Nervousness implies something negative is going on. If you're nervous, you already automatically have a different posture and demeanor when you say you're nervous about something. I'm not nervous. I'm excited.
Yeah. You're smiling a lot.
Yeah. I've worked hard for this moment to walk out there in front of everybody and show them what I've trained to do, what I'm here to do. Doesn't mean I'm going to win. Doesn't mean it's going to go my way.
But you set yourself up.
But the people who really care about me don't give a shit whether I win or lose.
Yeah.
All the fans and everybody else, they may be hot and cold whether I win or lose. But I can't place my value on that.
Yeah.
As a person, as an athlete.
Where did you put your value?
Friends and family. I mean, those are the ones that really matter. Mm. And, you know, value yourself enough to do the work, to prepare the best way you know how. And, you make a mistake, you get knocked down. You gotta, you know, pick yourself back up.
That's it.
Learn from that experience.
Was there ever a time where you were like, man, there's no way I can get out of this. Or maybe it's going to be really challenging for me to get out of this situation in the cage where you're just getting pummeled. You're just like in the worst, most uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times.
And then you somehow got out of it and you won. Was there ever a situation where you got out of
a couple of situations? Probably the toughest fight I was in was the first time I fought Pedro Rizzo. It was my first fight in Atlantic City. Big Brazilian kid, great kickboxer. tough kid, and it was a back and forth battle. I went out, won the first round, almost had him TKO'd. Spent a ton of energy trying to finish the fight.
Exhausted.
Didn't finish. You know, referee, Big John McCarthy was referee. Uh-huh. You know, I'd cut him, I'd hurt him, but it didn't stop the fight. And then second round, he came back, kicked me. I blocked the kick, but punched myself in the nose, broke my nose.
Oh, man.
So I'm bleeding all over now. And then he kept kicking me in the leg. It was the first time anybody'd really kicked me.
That's hard.
And he kicked me in the leg 14 times, I think, in my left thigh. Same spot. I have a dent still to this
day.
Where the tissue just didn't recover.
Right in the same spot. It's hard to walk when you get kicked a couple times.
Yeah, by the fifth round, he kicked me once, and my leg just gave out. I ended up on the floor.
Really?
Right as the buzzer ended. When I came back, and that was one of those times after the second round, I'm sitting there with a broken nose, bleeding.
Your legs are
just
broken.
Exhausted. And I'm sitting on my stool looking at Dan Henderson, who was my corner man, and they give you that 10-second warning. You know, seconds out, 10
You're
seconds.
Like, I need another 3 minutes.
And I'm just
sitting
there looking at him, and he's looking at me. He's like, what are you staring at me for? Let's go. I had to make a decision right then.
Wow.
You know, what was I going to do? And I got up and went out, and I won the third round. Won the fourth, he won the fifth, so he'd won the second and the fifth. I'd won the first, third, and fourth. Ended up winning a unanimous decision, but it was a brawl, tough.
Wow,
one. First fight my mom ever went to.
Oh my gosh! So much nice.
She was like,
that.
"I'll never watch it again on TV." She always had to wait for that phone call, you know.
Right.
She's like, "I know, I can see you're fine, you're all right, and I'm here. I don't have to wait for a phone call." She came to every fight after that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So. And I was in a fight up in Portland, Oregon, against Nogueira, who's a great submission guy. And I was in a couple of tough spots in that fight and managed through. We prepared, you know, the training process with my ground coach. He understood the submission game as well as anybody, Neil Melanson. And we just kind of prepared counters for any potential submissions that this guy seemed to like. And I ended up in all about all of them and managed to get out of about all of them.
Wow.
I ended up losing the decision, but it was still one of the fights I'm proud of that.
Wow.
You know, we'd done the work and it was a great fight.
I'm curious, how has MMA and wrestling affected and impacted your personal relationships, either with friends, with family, but also with intimate relationships?
Well, I have to this day some of the best friends that I've ever, through wrestling and fighting, some of the guys that are my closest friends. They're the guys I rely on. I know I can count on, and I think they know they can count on me. It's also been, I've been married and divorced 3 times.
Wow. Yeah.
It's been a challenge, staying connected, with one person, with all the travel, all the, you know, just everything kind of has to take a back seat. When you're trying to be the best at something and you know, my kids, my family, they've sacrificed as much as I have for that. Mm-hmm. And it's tough.
Challenging.
Very challenging. You know, I got married early. The first time I got married, I was 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And out of necessity, I think I went on autopilot. You know, my girlfriend, I dated the same girl my whole senior year in high school, and we kind of broke up. I was going across the state to Washington State, walking on the wrestling program there. She stayed at University of Washington.
Mm.
And I'm like, how's this going to work? And we ended up breaking up, but I came home. I didn't make the team in November, for Thanksgiving, the travel squad. I got beat out by a senior. He went on the trip. I went home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We went on a date, you know, she called me 3 weeks later. I'm pregnant.
Oh, man.
And I went on autopilot. I'm like,
sure.
You know, I'm like, I'm not going to be like my dad.
Right.
I don't care what happens. You know, I'm going to be there for this kid. It's going to be part, you know, I'm going to be part of his life. I'm going to be there and I'm not going to be like my dad. And we ended up getting married that February. I quit school, walked away from school and joined the service. And, was in the Army for 6 years. Had my second child, Amy, while we were stationed in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just slowly heading in different directions as we grew up, basically.
Yeah.
She's a great person. We always got along.
Yeah, that's great.
We raised 2 amazing kids.
Sure. So what's it like with the relationship with those kids, with, you know, again, you so focused and committed?
Yeah, well, I think they understood it, and that, you know, they came to all the fights, and I think they appreciated it in a lot of ways. It was an example of that hard work and that work ethic and all that. At the same time, there was the sacrifices. I didn't see him as much as I wanted to see him. I wasn't, especially after we divorced, you know, from 9 to 18, you know, wasn't there every day. Wasn't there as much as I'd like to have been, or as much as they'd probably wanted me to be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, fighting allowed us a bunch of things, you know, as a professional athlete that, you know, there were things that were benefits to that. So the sacrifice went both ways.
What are the main lessons you've wanted to teach your children about, you know, your sons, about what it means to be a man and be a good father? And
well, my youngest is 13, so he's just now kind of getting into puberty and all that stuff. And he's an only child, my only child from my second marriage. So there's a lot of challenges ahead with him. And again, you know, especially now, I'm as busy as I've ever been.
Yeah.
Again, divorced, and he lives in Oregon. I'm living, you know, in Vegas. It's a challenge to get up there as often as I want to see. He's just now kind of getting to that age where he's got the confidence to travel a little more himself.
Yeah, yeah.
But even then, he's got his own life. He's got his own friends. He's got his own things that he wants to do. They don't always revolve around, you know, oh, let's go hang out with Dad for the weekend, you know. And that being a weekend father is a tough thing.
It's tough.
You know, you want to have a good time. You don't want to have to discipline and you know, make corrections and do any of that stuff when it's the only time you get to see him this month.
Yeah.
And so that's a challenge. His mom's a very strong person, very strong personality. And I think, you know, that's a challenge too.
Yeah. So, what lessons are you trying to teach? You know, your other son's a fighter, right?
Ryan's fighting. He fights for Bellator, and he's a very, very smart, you know, went to college, got his degree in math, and then decided he wanted to fight.
Wow.
You know, he's always been into wrestling through junior high and high school and did very, very well, but was always a very smart kid. And
what are you trying to instill in him from the lessons you've learned?
I think he understands it. He understands it. It's about work, but at the root of it, you have to have a passion for it.
Yeah.
You have to love it. If you don't love it, especially in a sport this difficult, you're not going to make,
You're
not going to make the sacrifices and do the things you need to do to get there, to be the best at it.
Right. Right.
You may not be the most athletic or the most technically talented guy, but if you're willing to work, that'll make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And he seems to be willing to do the work.
What's your approach to teaching him what it means to be a man? Again, your father wasn't there for you. How do you try to teach him about masculinity and being a man?
I don't know. I kind of follow what I learned in the Army, which is lead by example.
Mm.
I've made mistakes. I've made plenty of mistakes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've owned them and been willing to be honest about them and not tried to hide or deny or you
right.
know, I think you have to stand up and take responsibility for yourself. And I think he gets that, in a lot of ways, he's a lot like me, which is cool. It's, you know, I'm proud of him. He's a great kid. He's married now.
That's nice.
Got married going on 2 years now, year and a half now.
Wow.
And his wife's lovely, and they live in Vegas and train with me.
That's great.
Getting more and more involved in the gym and trying to run the gym. I'd love to just hand that all off to him and go, you know, right off into the sunset, do my thing. But he's a great kid.
That's
he does
cool.
a great job. Every single person that meets him, you know, is so complimentary about what a nice man he is and
just
what
like
a
you.
Great kid he is and what a great job he does, how easy he is to work with, how fun he is to be around. And
sure.
Those, I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah. Talk to me about toughness and aggression. You know, you're considered, again, a lot of people consider you one of the toughest guys in the world, but you're also one of the nicest. What does toughness mean to you? And is it that hard work attitude or is it something
else? I think it comes from that work ethic, but it's not something you know you have unless you're willing to test it, unless you're willing to put yourself out there. I don't think people realize, and I guess maybe it's the sport of wrestling, you know, we used to do grind matches, 90-minute matches.
90 minutes?
Straight. Come in, tie your shit on. No breaks, no water, no nothing. You're going to wrestle for the next 90 minutes straight. No, don't know where to hide, nowhere to go. And that's the first time I've seen grown men actually break down.
Really?
And cry and just be, I mean.
This is in high school. You find
this,
college,
this was on the national team.
Wow.
We had some days like that in
the Army.
In the Army as well. High school wrestling is, in for all intents and purposes, wrestling is the Marine Corps of high school athletics.
That's it, man. That and football, and, I would say. Football's pretty close.
It's tough. You're going to find out where your breaking point is, how mentally tough you are, you know, how much you really want to be there, how much you really want and love to do what you're doing. And, I think you find those boundaries and you find that you can go a lot harder and a lot longer than you think you can. Your brain is telling you, oh, I'm tired. But you suck it up and you either have a coach or your training partner that pushes you, that motivates you to keep going, even when your brain's screaming that you want to quit.
Wow.
And your body, then you, next thing you know, you've gone 15 more minutes. You've gone 20 more minutes. Mm-hmm. When 20 minutes ago, your brain was telling you wanted to give up. And then I was like, wow, I didn't quit. I kept going. Mm-hmm. And now that boundary's been set back a little bit further. Now you're going to go that far before your brain starts screaming. And again, through the help of your own passion for it, your training partners who you don't want to let down and your coach who you don't want to let down, you're going to go another 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And now I got pushed back 10 minutes further and you just keep pushing that boundary back and going harder and farther than you thought you could go.
But if you don't absolutely,
that's mental toughness.
Yeah.
And it became my goal. It's something I learned at Oklahoma State. I think in the Army, junior high and high school, I loved the sport. In the Army, I learned that I could compete on an international stage. I don't think I had that confidence to do that when I was in junior high and high school.
Interesting.
I think when I was in the Army, I learned, oh, I can compete at this level.
You learned the toughness.
I was an alternate on the Olympic team as a soldier. I can do this.
Yeah.
Then I got a scholarship to go to Oklahoma State, one of the best wrestling colleges historically in the world.
Yeah.
And now I learned to win.
Mm.
Learn what it takes, the mental toughness to push myself and to work harder than anybody else and win. And, you know, I didn't always win, but I learned that I could win. And, again, went on to win 4 national titles in Greco and, you know, be the number one guy in 92 and 96. Then fell short, didn't achieve my goal, making the team, winning my medal. But I think that, again, that setback motivated me that much more to continue to keep going, to push myself further. I had more to achieve, more to do. And then MMA rolled along.
Right.
And I think if I'd have won my medal, I'd have been perfectly happy. I'd probably be a big old fat wrestling coach right now, blowing a whistle somewhere instead of, you know, continuing to, probably would never have been a fat wrestling coach.
Right. But, it's a trend. Yeah. Yeah. But you went on to win 6 UFC titles, right? Mm-hmm. Is that right? And I'm curious, you know, you said this is the first time you saw, I guess, boys, men cry when they hit their breaking point wrestling in these 90-minute sessions. What was it like when you'd see – was this a lot of people would do this or a few people would like break
down
and cry?
I saw it a couple times. Doesn't happen.
What would happen in the room when, you know, you saw that? Were people accepting of that or were they like quit being, you know, quit crying and stuff?
No, that's the thing. Good training partners. Your teammates, guys that you know you can trust. Mm-hmm. Again, when you find yourself in that situation where you can't go anymore, where you literally emotionally break, they're going to pick you up. They're going to help you go further, help you get through it. And that's what we do for each other.
Yeah. So it was more about support and love
absolutely,
and connection, not like quit being a pussy.
No, it was never like that. Well, you're never going to chastise that guy because that could be you tomorrow.
Right.
You don't know.
Interesting. So you really were embracing that experience.
You had to.
That's cool.
We're all struggling with it. A 90-minute match is a long match.
It's a long time.
We're all struggling, you know.
Wow.
We're all fighting the same fight, you know. And so on that any given day, that could be you. And you realize that. There's a recognition of that vulnerability, of that potential, of that wall, that barrier. And we're all trying to push it back,
yeah.
But we're all fighting it.
Do you ever feel like you had to suppress emotions when you were fighting? Like, I have to be tough and strong. I can't show my emotion.
Absolutely.
Really?
I think we learn to box things up as athletes. You know, we learn to stuff things, put them to the side and stay on task, stay on focused on what we need to do to go out and be effective and win.
How did that
affect? That's what's weird about acting now.
You have to express yourself.
Yeah, they want that. And I've spent my entire life, and I have that tendency anyway.
Yes.
To stuff things and not be terribly open and gregarious with my emotions.
Sure, sure.
I think, you know, even as a kid. So I spent a ton of time boxing it all up, pushing it to the side and staying focused on what I needed to do. And now I'm supposed to just let all that out. Like, this is weird.
Cry on command.
Yeah, you know, this is weird.
Do you feel like the, you know, boxing the emotions, that held you back in any way, or that was the only way to be successful?
I think that's where it had a detriment and affected my personal relationships.
Hmm. Do you feel like you could have done?
I had an adversity, and maybe it was because of the type of personality that my mom was and that my dad wasn't there. I didn't have an example in the house on how to deal, especially with those kind of confrontations, those emotional type of confrontations. And so I boxed all that up and just not engage at all. I didn't like that kind of confrontation, which is weird for a guy that gets in a cage and punches people in the face to be afraid of that kind of confrontation.
An emotional confrontation.
Yeah. I couldn't deal with that, man.
Really?
I hated it and had an aversion to it and would do anything to avoid it. And a lot of times would stick my head in the sand and not deal with issues, not deal with problems. And that's, I think, you know, I was good at it as an athlete. And I think that being good at it
in life,
that wasn't good. You know, things got bigger, things festered. Till they got to a point where they're insurmountable. You can't get over them. The connection's so fractured and broken that you can't fix it and end up, you know, walking away.
Wow. Do you think if you're, you know, you learned this at a younger age, whether you had your father around to guide you in that process, or you just learned how to share your emotions better and communicate certain things that were frustrating you or whatever, do you think you'd still be as ferocious of a warrior in your sport?
That's a good question. It's hard to say. I think, yeah, part of what made me who I am and what made me good at what it was my ability to kind of push that stuff to the side and stay focused and being a bit stubborn, pig-headed.
Yeah.
I think and had I learned to stand up in those emotional situations for myself and say what I really needed or say what was really bothering me and confront, I probably would still be married to one of those ladies.
Really?
More than likely. You know, the first one, we were so young.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's an excuse.
Right.
But
you're just figuring yourself out
We had no idea.
Yeah.
Really. We have two amazing kids that are amazing despite us.
Yeah.
I had a lot in common with the second one. But she's a very black and white person, a very sharp tongued, very straightforward, and that kind of confrontation, I couldn't deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't have the skills to deal with it. I think I'm better now as it was something about turning 50 for me. Most people say it's 40.
Right.
I mean, I just say I'm a late bloomer.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was something about turning 50 for me that all these things kind of, I felt like came home, and I understood myself better than I ever have. I know what I want. I know what I'll put up with. I know what I won't put up with. I'm better at communicating what I need, what I feel. I just didn't have all those skills in my 20s and 30s, certainly.
What do you think it takes to learn those skills? Is there classes? What is it?
I think being willing to open yourself up. You know, I spent a ton of time when I failed at something like marriage, I wanted to know why. And so I'd spend a ton of time, more time than I care to admit, with counselors, digging around in myself, trying to figure out how did I do this again?
Yeah.
How did I let this happen? What am I messing up? Why? I wanted to know why. I think if you're willing to put yourself out there, there's tons of places you can find answers. You can, but you got to be willing to muck around in that dark shit. that's in there that we all deal with.
A lot of nastiness.
We're all
in there.
Wounded, you
somewhere.
Know, all faulty somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
You can have the best parents in the world, and in that, they're damaging you. They're wounding you.
Or you could be bullied in school or have some other
a million different reasons and things that could have happened.
Learning disability or something. Yeah. Interesting. So what is your definition of masculinity now then? Like if you wanted to teach your sons and you're like, okay, this is what it means to be masculine, what would you say is that definition?
Man, it's such a tough question.
I know.
I think just being true to yourself, true into your heart and letting being strong enough to let people see that.
Mm.
I think we have a tendency to put up walls and put up fronts and not really, you know, we're scared to let people in, to let people see really what's going on, really what we feel like. And I think a real man is strong enough and confident enough to open up and let you see.
Think a real man cries?
I think a real man does.
Yeah.
You know?
Expresses emotion.
I think you have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you have to, or you're not feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you shut it off so long that you just don't feel anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's not good.
Yeah. I love it. I love the answer. I got a few more questions for you if that's cool. We got some time still?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm loving this. Some other facts. You're on Dancing with the Stars, huh?
Yeah.
How was that experience?
A blast. Karina Smirnoff was amazing. Amazingly talented and fun.
Yeah.
Fun to work with.
Sure. I've interviewed Julianne Hough, I've had her on the podcast.
Yeah.
She's great.
She was a judge when I was on. She wasn't dancing then, but
how'd you do?
The brother was Derek was dancing, and
I've worked out with
amazing.
Derek a couple times. He's incredible.
They're amazing. I could sit and just watch them goof around and practice because they're so amazing, so fluid, and just they make it look so easy. And then you're like, I could do that, and then you get out there and like, oh shit. I'm in way over my head. But a blast, absolute blast. But work, you better be ready to work because it's
worked
a
hard,
lot of work.
Huh?
Yeah, it's a crash course in how to be a professional dancer. It's
so basically 6 hours a day training.
6-7 hours a day.
Like training
and there's
again.
No day off.
Wow.
Even on Sunday, you're, you know.
In the studio.
You got camera rehearsals today and dress rehearsals tomorrow because the show's tomorrow night. I mean, that's Sunday and Monday.
Wow.
And you've been spending 4 or 5 days leading up to that learning a new dance.
Yeah.
That you're going to walk out there on national TV and do. So, I mean, it's intense. And
how far did you go?
I made it 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I think here's the thing. At the end of the day, it's a reality show.
Yes.
And
they
it's not always
won.
About the dancing. I think we were probably better dancers than some of the people that went a lot further in the show, but there's more to it than that. It's about votes and about getting
personalities,
you know,
types,
stuff.
And the hero that they want to put out there.
Yeah.
And
so there's a whole bunch of other things that are involved, but I had a blast doing it.
Would you do it again?
I would, actually.
Yeah.
It was fun. I really enjoyed it. I've loved to dance since I was a kid.
Wow, really?
My mom, you know, I think we're all petrified in the sixth grade going into the seventh grade. We knew we were going to have to do school dances, and we're all petrified. Mm. And they do dancing in PE class in the sixth grade. I think, you know, square dancing and other types of dancing, but to kind of break you in and get you ready mentally that this is what's going to happen in junior high and high school.
Uh-huh.
And I was petrified like everybody else. And my mom's like, oh, I love to dance. I used to do competitions when I was in school. And she taught me how to jitterbug. And I had this great group of friends. We'd have dance competitions and all this stuff at our parties. And I just always loved it. I never until then.
We'll make sure to link up. We'll find a video to link up from you dancing with the stars.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody was a little surprised that I could, 220 pounds, I could actually move.
It's really cool. Now I'm curious. Now you've transitioned from UFC, MMA fighting, and you started getting into the acting world. We've kind of talked about it a little bit. Some of the big things that I've seen that you've done all three Expendables.
Mm-hmm.
So you worked with Sylvester Stallone, Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, some of the best guys in the business, for sure.
Biggest actors in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
That must have been incredible. You also did The Scorpion King 2, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ambushed and a few other things since then, right?
Yeah, I think I've done 29 now.
29 movies?
Yeah.
Holy
I've been doing
cow.
It for 15 years.
29
My
movies.
First movie experience was Cradle to the Grave.
Okay.
And they were looking for real cage fighters.
Wow.
So they went through the UFC. It's like, we want some real cage fighters. Do you have some guys? And I had my SAG card from a commercial back in – in 96
so going into
the Atlanta Games.
You're already
in
it.
So they called me Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz to be in this movie as cage fighters. Which was not a stretch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and it was kind of an underground fight scene. And I ended up getting a fight scene with Jet Li, who was one of the stars in the movie. And I had one line in the movie. Let's go, chicken shit. I must have said that 25 times.
Practiced it.
Like, oh my God. If I have to say this one more time.
They wanted to get the perfect look.
Huh? But that was like getting to go to Oz and see behind the curtain, you know, how, you know, the guy back there pulling the levers and making the smoke and the fire. It was really cool. Very intriguing, very interesting, getting to see the whole process, and I immediately fell in love with it. And I've been a guy who loved the movie since I was a little boy. My mom used to take me and my sisters to the Lynn Twin in Lynnwood, where I grew up, to the double feature. And, you know, they had the clown or something going on between the two movies, and we'd stay and watch both movies. Yeah. And, since I was a little kid, I always loved the movies.
That's cool.
So
what's more, I guess you said you don't get nervous before a big fight, but what's scarier for you? Your first UFC fight or your first big movie? What was like more nerve wracking?
The first time I fought, really? It was definitely, walking out. It's just so surreal.
50,000 screaming.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having had those experiences, walking out on the wrestling mat for some big matches, you know, NCAA finals, yeah. Olympic trials,
Pan Ams,
world championships, you know, some big matches prepared me for then eventually walking out of that tunnel for a fight, different rules of engagement, a whole different thing. Fans were crazy,
but you kind of had experience,
it kind of stepped up. And then I think really being involved in the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show, having a camera follow you around 24/7.
You got used to it. Yeah.
You got, for the first week, it feels weird and you're like, oh, there's that cameraman again. It's kind of, you're kind of self-conscious about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then after a while, you just doing what you do and you forget about it, which can be good or bad.
Cause then you say stupid stuff.
Yeah. You say crap you shouldn't say. But I think then I was used to being in front of the camera. I wasn't self-conscious anymore. So then you get the chance to go to that first movie. And again, I'm there as a fighter. Mm-hmm. That's not hard.
Right.
I've been doing that for a long time. So I just could be what I was. And I didn't think about the camera. I wasn't worried about that. And then, you know, it built from there to actually getting to try and find ways to play characters.
Sure.
And, you know, you get to do and say and be things you would never be in real life, which is what's fun about
it. That's cool. What was it like with those guys, with the Expendables, with all the all-stars?
Man, it was surreal. Even they're looking at each other like, can you believe we're all here? This is crazy.
Really?
Yeah. It was, you had this sense that they were like scratching their head, kind of looking at each other. You know, Expendables 2, we're in this city in Bulgaria called Plovdiv, and we're at this airport that we utterly destroy this airport in, one way, shape or form. And we're chasing Jean-Claude Van Damme's character through this airport. And it's cold outside, so we're in these tents, and we're all like tacking up. We're all putting all our gear on. There's Chuck Norris, Bruce Willis, Schwarzenegger.
You'd had this training.
Stallone.
Everyone.
Everybody there. We're all kind of getting this gear on.
You know, like a locker room or what?
Yeah, like, it was like a locker room.
Shut up.
So we're all kind of looking at each other like, can you believe this?
This
is amazing. Yeah. It was really cool.
Wow. And you were like those guys were all mostly actors. You were, you know, becoming an actor. Was it different for you than I think for them, you think?
You're like,
these guys are just, you know, big movie stars.
Well, they certainly know the lay of the land. And if you want to learn, if this is what you're aspiring to do, then what better group of guys to hang out with and kind of watch how they operate and show. They demonstrated to me why they've been at the top of their game for 30 plus years, many of them. And the dichotomy of the couple of guys there that maybe have been way up and down.
You could tell difference.
They demonstrated why they've been way up and down too. So, it was a learning experience for sure. If you're paying attention, again, I apply those wrestlers' eyes to everything I do. And so I'm paying attention. I'm spending time in Video Village, learning about lenses, learning about camera speeds, learning about why you shoot this one that way and how you light that one that way and that sort of thing. Just because it's really intriguing. It's a very interesting process. It's magic in some ways.
It is, man. Did anyone kind of like bring you under their wing, like Sylvester or Schwarzenegger? Did anyone like say, hey, come here, Randy, let me help you out a little bit?
I've had a couple directors along the way that have given me tidbits. I got to work with David Mamet in Red Belt.
Mm-hmm.
Great film, kind of an American samurai story.
Sure.
and he's, you know, well-renowned writer and director,
yeah.
And just kind of getting to hear from him. It's like, don't worry about the words. Just let it, just spit it out. Just say it like this. You know, and Sly kind of reiterated that too. We're a first scene where all the Expendables come together in one. We're about to go in these tunnels and try and rescue the girl.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's four or five of us around there. It's the first scene where all of us come together. You know, the movie had been shooting for a couple of weeks, but that was the first one where all the Expendables came together in one camera shot. And so it was kind of, everybody was kind of buzzing about it. And then we're standing around this tunnel entrances and there's three or four different things of dialogue that have to happen. So you have to know your lines, but you have to know your cue too. When he says this is what I'm supposed to, and it was kind of going sing-songy the way it was coming out. And Sly's like, no, that's not, we're in a hurry here. We're getting ready to, you know, we're synchronizing our watches to go into this mission. This is not how this would be said. Spit it out. Quit, you know. And so we're like, okay, that made sense. So we just, you just let it go. And then it sounded right. It worked right. And so, you know, little things like that that you have to pay attention to, that these guys know these things.
On that cast, the Expendables cast, who was the most impressive to you? That you were just like, man, that guy is just a pro. And it's just like.
Well, I spent the most, obviously, all three movies were, they're Sly's baby.
Yeah.
And he wrote the first one. Like Rambo, like Rocky. I mean, he's very, very
he's talented.
Smart man. And to see, I don't know how he survived the first movie as the writer, the director,
producer, whatever,
in front of the camera. We're running three units, you know, he's looking at all the dailies, doing all the rewrites, plus acting and directing. And I'm like,
he's a machine.
We're working nights. We worked nights the entire film. I'm like, when does this guy sleep?
Wow.
So, but to have him adjust dialogue, you know what? It makes more sense for him to say that. You say this, you say that, and let's try it that way.
So there's a lot of editing on the go.
And then, oh, you know what? This scene needs flat. We need a one-liner or something. And he'll come up with a one-liner off the top of his head.
Really?
He was just really, really brilliant.
Wow.
Very, very, very smart. And, you know, Schwarzenegger's the same way. I've seen him step up in front of 1,000 people at the Arnold Classic for the After School All-Stars and just off the cuff.
He's amazing.
Gregariously engaged the entire audience.
Humor.
That's a gift.
It's a gift.
And everybody thinks because they talk funny or they have an accent that they're not smart. They're smart guys.
Yeah, brilliant. Wow. What do you think is the biggest misconception about you that people have?
Well, I think people most know me for walking up in a cage and punching guys in the face. And so there's a kind of a veneer or a particular appearance that comes with that. And I'm a competitive.
Yeah.
I can be an SOB. I can be a tough SOB if I need to be. But I think I'm a very normal, I'm a normal guy. I could have lived next door to you for years and you'd have never known the difference. And, I've struggled with a lot of the same things that everybody else struggles with. They have a tendency to put these athletes up on these pedestals, and it's really hard for them to live up to that. So I never tried to create a persona, and I felt bad for guys like Tito. He kind of created this bad boy persona, and I've had this conversation with him. He's like, he hates it. He doesn't want to live up to that all the time.
Yeah,
and you see now, as he's matured, that he's kind of let that go. He doesn't really have to be that guy anymore.
Yeah. Conor McGregor
Exactly. He's got everybody expects that of him everywhere he goes.
It's exhausting.
Man, I can't imagine that that's really who he is.
Right.
And I just tried to keep it simple. Try to be who I am. I have a love for this. I really enjoy competition.
Mm-hmm.
Individual combative sports is what, at 10 years old, again, I started it for the wrong reasons, probably to get my dad's attention, but I found what I loved. I found what I wanted to do.
Mm.
So, it worked out.
Have you reconnected with your dad a lot since?
Well, my dad passed a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 10 years of his life, we spent more time together than we did
the
first 30 of mine.
Wow, that's great. Do you feel like
he loved fighting?
Yeah.
I used to bring him to the fights.
So he did come to the fights.
And he was a big fan of that.
That's cool.
You know, he never saw me wrestle.
Mm.
Which is where it started for me. And
yeah.
I came to a few soccer games when I was a kid. I loved soccer too. I started playing soccer at 5 years old. He came to a few soccer games, but he never came to a wrestling match, at least to my knowledge.
Yeah.
you know.
Did you get to?
He missed out.
Yeah, he missed out. Yeah. Did you get to, you know, kind of open up and use some of the tools you have now to share kind of how you felt about things with, from the past? With
I
him,
never or? Got that opportunity.
Hmm.
We came close a couple times, but we never really. Hmm. And he wasn't one of those guys that was very open with the way he felt.
He didn't want to communicate. He didn't want to go there.
Yeah, it was hard for him. And I think there were things there that still hurt. Still hurt for him.
Yeah,
still
he probably hurt. Felt shameful and guilty and all those things.
I don't know. It's hard to say, but I suspect.
Yeah.
And I saw as he got older, and he never really paid much mind. He didn't know my oldest two, Ryan and Amy, but my youngest, Caden, he'd moved down to the lower 48. He was closer. So whenever I went to see Caden, he would drive the 6 hours down from Central Washington and spend the weekend with us and really kind of doted on Caden. And in my mind, I'm like, what the hell?
What about the other two? Yeah.
What about me?
Are you?
You know, where were you when I was this old? You know, and I think that's where he was at. I think he realized he'd missed something, and he was kind of making up for it by you know, Christmas gifts and different things with my youngest.
Spoiling
him. And, you know, my youngest kind of got closer to him than any of the rest of us did. You know, Grandpa Ed. So,
yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, the passing was tough, and it is what it is.
Yeah. So you never got to really share with him how you felt or what we were upset about?
No.
No.
I think he probably would have felt better if I did, if I'd have just blasted him and just, you know, let it all out.
What do you think you would have said to him?
I think he would have felt better. It would have been cathartic for him if I'd have, but I just was never wired that way.
Yeah.
And I don't think I had the skills to let all that out. At some point, I just had to come to terms with it and let it go.
Yeah.
I realized all the things that he put me through, all the things that you know, dealing with my mom and as a single parent that she had to do to take care of three kids, they made me who I am.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know what? I can't harbor animosity and anger because of those things that made me who I am if I'm okay with who I am.
Sure.
So I had to let go of all that.
Yeah. If you could just tell him one sentence what you'd want to share, you don't have to scream at him, but what would you do?
I think that's what I would tell him.
Yeah.
You know what? I was pissed off and I was upset that you were never around. And, you know, I had to do father-son soccer games with Tim's dad, John, instead of you. You never even saw me wrestle one time. But all those things drove me. They motivated me. They, you know, and I could have made a lot of other worse choices.
Yeah.
I had, you know, a lot of guys use that as an excuse to be dirtbags, to be douchebags, to be drug addicts, to be whatever. You know, it motivated me to be better, to do the things I've done.
That's great. That's great. Final couple questions. Okay. I feel like I could talk to you all day about this stuff. I love the mindset, the toughness, everything that you're going through. This is exciting for me. What are you most grateful for in your life recently?
My family and my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have an amazing group of friends. They help me with my charity endeavors. They understand me. They don't want to talk about fighting. They don't, you know, that's how, you know, fans and
they don't care about that stuff.
Yeah. They don't care about any of that.
Yeah.
They know me since way back
before you were.
Yeah.
Before you were the guy.
When I was wet in the bed, crying out loud.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my mom and my sisters, I think that's what it boils down
to. That's
cool. My kids are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and the biggest struggle is with the youngest, with Caden, and trying to be a bigger part of his life, finding time and spending more time and having an impact on him.
Yeah.
And, he's kind of coming into those years where it's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a challenge.
Yeah. What's the dream for you now? Is it to be, you know, if you could write the story for the next 50 years, you've had an incredible first half of your life, essentially. Mm-hmm. If you could write the next half of your life, what would the movie script look like for you? Like, what would you create? What roles would you have? What type of person would you be? You know, would you run for office? You know, what are the things that you want to do?
Yeah, I don't see myself running for office.
Right.
And I don't know, for some reason, again, I think turning 50 there was something about all that.
Yeah.
I've been writing poetry since I was in college.
Wow.
You know, at my mid-20s and then accumulated all these poems and things that I'd written over the years. I'd never shared them with anybody ever. And if something happened, I don't know, at 50, turning 50 and realizing I lived a half a century, I started posting some of them and letting some of that out. And, you know, my GI Foundation is something that means a lot to me. You know, having worn the uniform in the 80s and never had a shot at, never got put my ass on the line.
Right.
Unlike the guys nowadays that are dealing with, you know, traumatic brain injuries and PTSD and living through things that a lot of guys didn't live through before, missing limbs and stuff.
Yeah, it's tough.
Trying to raise awareness and money and help some of these guys out that need a little extra help, has been something I've been involved in for the last 8 years that means a lot to me. You know, seeing Ryan continue to flourish and do the things that he seems to have a passion for and, you know, kind of hopefully pass that mantle on to him, let him take the brand, take the things that I started and let him continue with that. I'd like, you know, that's something I want to continue. And I'm having a blast acting, learning more, getting better at it. I want to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be easy to do the action films
or
the fighter stuff, the martial arts stuff. I want more challenging stuff. So trying to ferret out and put myself in those situations, learn to let all that stuff out.
Yeah, sure.
And just show it and embrace it.
Are you doing a consistent acting class too, where you're,
I have a coach that I work with, that I really, really enjoy. And he's been on every end of the spectrum. He's an amazing guy, Barry Primus, that helps, has I've been working with him for about 6 or 7 years.
That's cool.
So getting a chance to spend more time with him when I can. It seems like we get less and less time, but, when I got a role coming up, when I got a script that I'm going to have to, you know,
it's
a challenge. Yeah. He helps me kind of ferret out, dig through it and find a way to relate to that character, to tell the truth, to play that character and tell the truth, no matter what he does.
Right. Cool. That's cool. Okay. This is a question I asked at the end for everyone. It's called the three truths question. And I didn't prepare you for this, so this is off the cuff for Randy. But if this is, many years from now, it's your last day. And it's your last day here on this earth. You never know. But let's say it's many, many years. Another half a century.
Fill these lungs for the last time right here.
You never know. Yeah. This is it. But let's say it's 50 years from now, let's say. And
let's hope. How's that?
Okay, let's hope. Yes. And you've achieved everything you want. Everything you say you want, you went out and you've done it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of hard work still, but you've created it. And everything you've created, for whatever reason, has been erased. All the movies, the books you've written, the poetry you've put out there, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And your great-great-grandchild comes up and says, here's a piece of paper and a pen. Can you write down the three truths that you know from your whole life, everything you know to be true? If you boil it down to three simple things that you'd pass on to us, essentially, that we could look at, we could frame it, and it would be, you know, your example of how to live life or what you know to be true. What would be those three truths for you?
I think you got to live. I think a lot of people are going through the motions. They're not really living. You got to love. I think it sounds like a poster already, doesn't it? Live, laugh, and love. I think I've had a lot of fun doing the things that I do, even when there was a lot of work involved.
Yeah.
But I think you do those three things the best that you can.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go through the motions. Do what you want to do. Live how you want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And you better smile and have fun doing it. And try to find somebody to share it with. Love somebody. Find somebody to share it with.
I love that. Simple, man, but it's effective. Mm-hmm. That's great. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Randy, for your incredible symbol of excellence. You know, at every stage of your life so far, you've been a great symbol of showing what's possible for people. You know, starting late, kind of getting fame late in your 30s, starting a sport that you've never done before and excelling it, you know, being 6-time champion, world champion. It's incredible. But also doing it with a smile on your face and not having to be this like tough guy, like mean or nasty about it, but really being like, hey, I can be a nice guy as well and also a achieve my goal in the context.
In the face.
Yeah, still punch you in the face. But your level of humility is unbelievable. Your humility and your symbol for excellence. Like, I know how much work you've put in. It's unbelievable the amount of energy and effort you put in to achieve what you do. So I just want to acknowledge you for your incredible symbol and for the man that you are and the how you represent manhood in a great way.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
And before I ask the final question, where can we hang out with you and connect with you most? Where should we go? What's the website or social media?
I'm on Randy_Couture on Twitter, Randy Couture on Facebook, XC Natch on Instagram.
Okay. Where do you hang out the most? Where do you like, which platform?
They all, everybody's got a smartphone now. They all kind of come to your smartphone.
Sure.
They're all kind of intertwined and connected. So if I post on one, they kind of bleed over and post everywhere.
Sure.
And,
cool.
And, you can kind of track me that way. The gym website, the GI Foundation, Extreme Couture GI Foundation. .org,
okay,
xcgif.org. All those are kind of the calendars of where I'm at, what's going on with me.
Sweet.
You know, we just had a big month for the charity this last month. Big ride down in Georgia, big country concert down there. We just had our 8th annual ride and country concert in Vegas as well.
So, nice. Okay.
Rubbing elbows with a lot of soldiers and having a lot of fun.
That's great. We'll have it all linked up here on the show notes afterwards. So make sure you guys go check it out, follow Randy, and check out the sites as well. The final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
I think it's easy to admire and kind of peg the guy that wins all the time as being great. But in my opinion, I think your true measure of greatness is how somebody deals with losing, how somebody deals with loss. And how they respond to that adversity. That's what's really going to show me your character. That's what really going to tell me what you're all about. And so that's when I start to pay attention is what happens. You know, everybody talked about Ronda Rousey losing this last year. And I'm like, well, now we get to really see what Ronda Rousey's made of and how is she going to respond to that adversity? And I suspect that, we haven't seen it yet, but I suspect that she's going to pick herself up and we'll see her come back as strong as ever. But, I think dealing with that kind of adversity and loss is what greatness is all about. That's what great people do. They pick themselves up, they figure out where they went wrong, and they get about doing it better.
The legendary Randy Couture. Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate
Pleasure.
It.
Thanks for having me.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this episode with the one and only Randy Couture. And if you did, make sure to share this out and give Randy some love. Tweet him, post about him on Instagram and Facebook. All of his information is back at lewishouse.com/335. If you enjoyed this as well, leave a comment. Leave a comment below the blog or below the YouTube video over on youtube.com/lewishouse. And let me know what you think. Let me know what you took away from this episode in the comments section as well. And if you enjoyed this, make sure to please leave us a review. When you leave a review, it helps us get more awareness about the podcast. So if you love the podcast, if you appreciate getting it for free, if you appreciate the guests that I'm getting on here, then make sure to help spread the word by promoting it and also leaving a review on iTunes. You guys mean the world to me, and you're never too old or too young to achieve your dreams and pursue them. And Randy's an incredible example and symbol of that. So I hope you took that away from this episode. And you can still go after your dreams and be a nice, genuine, loving human being. You don't have to be some nasty, mean person. Even if you're fighting or wrestling, you can still be joyful and bring a smile to the cage and to the ring in any area of your life. You can do it with joy and positivity and lifting others up around you. You don't have to take others down in order for you to get to the top. It's about making sure everyone wins around you. And I hope you guys feel that and know that and continue to do that in your lives as well. I appreciate you. I love you guys very much. You mean the world to me. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.